We have been stealing the future from our children.
Challenges of conservation and combating climate change are connected.
Corruption is being created by wildlife crime.
Speciesism is very much the same as racism or sexism.
We must rethink our relationship with wildlife, the environment, and each other. Join us as we uncover the innovative, unifying, and urgent solutions we need to protect the planet from ourselves. This is the art of conservation.
Okay, guys, welcome back. Second episode of season three. And a nice contentious one today, because I think the world is a buzz. I mean, certainly every headline that I'm reading or every search that comes up around rhino is talking about the platinum rhino auction. Dominating headlines that I'm seeing and reading. And I guess, sadly, a long time coming. We've obviously all been following Hume's journey for quite some time. And I was hoping that this whole moment in rhino conservation would inspire a little bit more of a collaborative ethos, you know, of people saying, okay, well, the biggest protagonist of trade has failed. If we are committed to rhino conservation, we should surely now be looking at plan C instead of arguing about plan A and B. And sadly, I think it's not the case. I think it's as divisive, if not more divisive, than it's ever been. And I'll say it off the bat that I don't think it's necessarily coming from Hume himself. I think that there is a lot of grandstanding by the pro-use brigade that have jumped on the bandwagon, have now gone, look, you see what happens when we don't have trade? 2,000 rhinos are destitute.
I think you should just give our listeners a little bit of background, because not everybody's going to know what you're talking about. So just a little bit of what's happening today.
Okay, so let's rewind the clock a little bit. Let's go back to 2008, I believe it was, when John Hume, who historically made a huge amount of money as a property developer, I believe, turned his attention to rhinos and rhino breeding. And he put together an initial breeding crash from what I believe was about 98. In the end, it was about 98 founding crashes or sites around Southern Africa. And he brought them together at his entitled Dream Ranch in South Africa's Northern Cape province and started to breed rhino and has proven to be extremely good at it. And if we look at it, at his program, just from the ability to breed rhino, it's extraordinary what he's achieved. There's now just on 2,000 rhino. And, you know, the paperwork that he has suggests, or media reports, should I say, suggests that he's growing that crash by over 100 calves a year. So there is value in terms of what he's done in terms of breeding rhino, and I take nothing away from him. And I want to say off the bat that I'm not going to join these ad hominem attacks on Hume just because trade has seen a failure. I think that the entire conservation community is beset by divisive and what I believe is absolutely infantile behavior. When the moment we disagree with someone, we take personal slights. And I think that that's just radically immature. So although I'm going to speak very objectively today, and there will be some peppered subjective personal views in the mix and all of that, I'm going to try and look at it as pragmatically as I possibly can. But what we know to date is that after all of these years of Hume breeding rhinos and calling for investment to back his rhino breeding business with the promise of trade delivering the great results, Platinum Rhino then sought to sell the property. And that number was around 75 million, I believe, was the starting asking price some time back. Varying
dollars or rand?
Dollars.
Wow. So
it was a huge amount of money. It was sort of half a billion rand at the time, at that time's exchange rate. And that too proved unsuccessful. And Hume has been forced into auctioning the property and all the rhinos. So they might go as a single lot, or they might go unbundled and just flogging off rhinos at a time. But the online auction went live today, and it runs until the 1st of May.
Oh, wow.
And what we do know about the process of that is that it's an online blind auction, so we can't see who's bidding, and bidders can't see who's bidding, as I understand it. There is a 90,000 Rand refundable deposit to participate as a potential bidder. So anybody that's unsuccessful would get that money back. And the starting bid is $10 million, so 180 million Rand, so considerably less than what he was asking for before. As far as we know, there is a handful of registered interested parties. Very, very few. I don't believe it's more than about four or five. And I base that purely on the discussions that I've had with multiple parties to try and get a sense of who is open enough to say, yes, we've got an interest, or I know they have an interest. Every one of those bidders is under strict non-disclosure agreement. So I don't want to compromise that. And we've considered the property before, and I'm going to spend more time talking about that in a moment. But so I want to be really, really careful and very respectful of the process that's happening now. There's a hell of a lot at stake, irrespective of our opinions on whether we are pro-trade or against trade. There is a lot that can be derailed in this. But the opening statement on the bidder documentation, so on the site where the bid is being hosted, we'll share that link in the show notes, and that's public access. You can go and take a look at it. And there is several documents there that make for some very interesting reading, from the asset count of the animals on site, not just the rhino, but the buffalo, etc. And it's broken down into the number of animals and so on. And I'll get into that shortly. But the opening statement reads, Platinum Rhino is a registered captive breeding operation for the purposes of conservation to save a threatened species from extinction. The captive breeding operation registration certificates are available to view. In 2008, the population founders were sourced from 98 locations around South Africa, and due to poaching, many of these populations no longer exist, making Platinum Rhino as a genetic breeding nucleus irreplaceable. Platinum Rhino Captive Breeding Operation is now the largest and most successful southern white rhino breeding and protection project in the world. Underpinned by a comprehensive biological and breeding management plan, the experienced and dedicated veterinary team enables Platinum Rhino to breed up to 200 progeny a year. The state-of-the-art security system and world-class security team afford the project foolproof security. And not one rhino has been lost to poaching since 2017, 6 years without a loss to poaching, which is a staggering statement. Platinum Rhino has the foundation and potential to continue its current success at rhino conservation by providing rhino for rewilding and range expansion projects, as well as contributing breeding animals for the reestablishment and or reinforcement of other rhino populations far into the future. Sorry, I'm sitting at our sanctuary, so we've got lots of ambient noise. I'm not in a studio today, so forgive the odd helicopter flying over. So before I get into this, I really dive into this. Just a few of those points again. I'm not going to slam Hume. I think we're well past that, and we need more collaborative discussion, let alone collaborative outcome in conservation. So again, I just want to be pragmatic as possible. I also want to make sure that we don't associate Hume in this big sort of umbrella and the judgments offered to Hume in public media are the same leveled at his staff. There are some truly extraordinary people working at Platinum Rhino that are absolute experts and are brilliant at what they do. Beyond the breeding of large numbers, which is a success in its own right, if we just look at that, the lessons learned, and particularly through the veterinary team, is immense. And the intellectual contributions to veterinary sciences, I don't believe, can be overstated. And in particular, Michelle, Hume's lead vet, has got to be the most experienced and the most educated wildlife vet in the world when it comes to rhino as a result of this project. We've heard her speak multiple times, and she is extraordinary. She knows so much about rhino, and that in itself is a contribution to conservation. So again, I don't want to take this view where we take platinum rhino, and because we don't like trade, we go, the whole project is shitty and everybody associated is morally bankrupt. Fundamentally not true. And we've got to give it the respect it deserves to unpack it, to really try and understand the discussion. Because at the end of the day, we're talking about the future of those rhinos now. The future of Hume has been stated. He's out. He's out. That program is going to end as it currently stands. Maybe someone buys it, keeps everybody on board and carries on. Who knows? We just don't know. But with the information we have at hand, Hume wants out. Somebody else is going to come in and stay there and take it on, or someone's going to come in and take pieces of it. Somewhere within that is going to be is going to be the truth. So, yeah, Shan?
So can I just ask, like, because I know a lot of people might be wondering this, is the only thing that makes this an appealing the fact that he's pro-trade? But what he's actually doing there with the breeding of the rhino, is that inherently bad? Because, I mean, we want to breed Munu. So can you explain, like, what is the difference? And because not everybody's going to, I think a lot of people will have this question.
Right. So I think for me, I'll answer that question personally, is that I think intention has everything to do with it. And what we've seen up until now is that Hume very publicly has advocated his facility as an investable trade opportunity. It's only very recently that it has defaulted to almost an exclusively conservation-based narrative for years. And this is not an opinion. This is very much in public media, accessible by all. He's been on record multiple times saying, you know, things like he doesn't really care who buys the rhino horn and what they use it for. This is the opportunity. Trade is the answer.
And including the syndicates, I'm assuming.
What do you mean by that?
Including it going into the illegal market.
Well, yes. That has been the statement, and that has been the sort of extrapolation of his points, is that whether it is through legal or illegal trade, the end user, in whatever capacity, is not of his concern. It's just about, is there a viable market for it? And he made some pretty big inroads, let's be honest. There is a very, very powerful lobby that are not quitting, that are not giving up on trade, and are pushing for it. And I would not be surprised, obviously we don't know, but I am sure that there are some very familiar pro-traders in the mix wanting to consider purchasing that property or purchasing the entire operation. So that aside.
But if that were true, wouldn't they have done it already and not waited for an auction? Because they're all close.
You see, if I can, just hold on to that question, because I want to get to that point a little bit later. I want to get through some of the fundamentals of it first. But yeah, it's a huge point that you just hit on. So write that one down, because that is one of the biggest points. So in his exploration of trade, that has been the breeding mantra. And he's had good people go to bat for him and have supported him along the way. Friends of ours have supported him. The likes of Dr. John Hanks has been very, very vocal in their support of Hume and what he's doing. But in all of that, there were some fundamental flaws in the argument, which again we can talk to. But there was never a definitive view to say how was trade going to impact the protection of state-held rhinos in places like Kruger, where they were being decimated while platinum rhino was building up. Hume has sunk millions into this business. The first job of any investor is to recover the investment. So I don't see, outside of operating expenses, how any investor would have come in and said, yeah, I'm fine for you to go and fund other people's protection of wild rhino while we exaggerate the risk through trade. Doesn't really make sense to me. But again, we'll get into that because that's actually a trade discussion. And what I want to focus on to answer your first question is an auction discussion and to look at the fundamentals of what Hume's been doing. But there were two rhetorics that kind of came out of the public media that I'll get to in a subjective view. You know, there's this big chorus that's suddenly saying, you know, this is the last hope for rhino because of the genetic diversity and the size of the breeding crash, et cetera. Now, I've chatted to various very, very qualified people on this very subject in the last few days. Every single one of them off record has said, to be blunt, if we didn't have Hume's rhinos, we didn't have them, are we still in a recoverable position with the rest of the dispersed populations that we have? The scientific answer is yes. So there's that. The anti-traders have jumped on the bandwagon, you know, the pro-traders have jumped on the bandwagon and blamed this failure of Hume on the anti-traders, on those against trade. Like you see what happens when you don't allow us to trade. This amazing conservation project falls on its ass. And so I think that there's grandstanding, and again, not by Hume, but I think there are people in the pro-trade environment that are jumping on this to serve their own agendas. And I'll hold my hand up and caution myself at doing the same on this very podcast today. So, it goes both ways, guys, and I recognize that. So let's jump into more of what I understand about all of this. Perhaps a slightly subjective view, but I don't believe that this is a very sad day for conservation. I think it's more a sad day for agriculture, because that's what it's always been the proposition of, is that agriculture was somehow going to provide a conservation solution and would mitigate the illegal trade. I don't see that happening. And the only reason why I make that subjective statement at the top is because the game hasn't changed. We've got to hold the line. This isn't a victory. This is a moment in time that is going to impact conservation discussions and conservation funding and conservation opportunity. And it could impact it negatively. It could impact it positively. We don't know, because we don't know who's going to buy it and what their intentions are going to be. So I don't want to speculate on that, but I will say that this, please, can this be the culmination of a discussion that says somehow agriculture is going to solve a conservation or an ecological problem? I don't have evidence of it working brilliantly before, and I have never seen a concise argument to suggest that it would with rhino. Anyway, so at no stage until now, the chorus of support has been led by that conservation value. It was always rather led by the chorus, you know, the profits must go to save rhino, and we don't really know how that's going to happen. But the question I have for all of that is, on the chorus of pro-trade and trade is such a great solution and it's inevitable and it must happen, the question we need to ask is, why has no one as yet taken out their checkbook for platinum rhino? As an investor or as a major philanthropist? Perhaps we don't know the philanthropic side, but from what I know, no major philanthropist has said, love what you're doing, yet here's a bunch of zeros. Why have the massively wealthy pro-use fraternity not invested, to your point? And the answer for me is actually quite simple, because the moment we put the emotion and the divisive discussions aside and you want to figure out something's worth and you remove everything out of that argument except traditional investment values and investment due diligence, any such mega investment like this has to go through some pretty severe scrutiny for it to make sense to an investor. And it simply doesn't add up. It's a bad investment. It's kind of that simple. You know, if we look at it, the cost of goods is astronomical when you consider the capital Hume himself has spent on security alone, let alone land, veterinary, food supplements, et cetera, et cetera. the cost of goods is extremely high compared to the barrier to entry for a poacher, which is zero. Your cost of goods when you steal something is zero. You know, there's opportunity risk, sure, but there is nothing else. So the cost of breeding rhino for commercial value is incredibly high. And the trade is internationally banned, and that is unlikely to change for some time, if at all. Again, another discussion. And his head of security in the video that's on the website at the moment was quoted as saying that their security efforts deflect poaching to less protected areas. So further compounding the call for sanctity as trade as a solution for poaching, it's flawed. So it's not going to solve that conservation-based agenda within the investment. How is it going to do that? If your own security measure is to deflect poaching to less protected areas.
That's horrible. That's like saying, go steal from my neighbor, not me. And then that's
No, 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 no. Hold on a second. I knew you would bite on that. And here's a consideration. What is dehorning? Dehorning is to devalue the rhino that a poacher is looking at with the knowledge that there is potentially another rhino out there with a horn and I'm going to go after that one.
Right.
Principally, yeah. It's the same thing.
But is that what they mean? They dehorn their rhino? Is that all they're trying to say? Because I don't think it's worded very nicely.
No. The point is that all of their security measures, whether that be dehorning cameras, APUs, whatever they've got going, and their list of security assets on the website is pretty impressive. I can see why they've been successful.
I think it's simply a case of a thief taking from the easiest source.
Correct.
So, exactly. I mean, we've seen it, whether you accept it, that Kruger has got a bit better at it or not. The fact of the poaching diminished in Kruger and reflected then in KwaZulu-Natal, where we know that the conservation security issues are at an all-time low. So I think that's just a general thieving process.
100%.
But, if you lock your car and the car next to yours is unlocked, the thief will take the unlocked car. And it's as simple as that. Yeah.
It's as simple as that. So, again, there's no judgment on the character for saying that.
No.
He's saying what all of us do. So, we might have different
that makes
tactics
sense.
Strategies,
yeah.
But we all do.
Yeah.
But the other
that makes
thing
sense, is, but it could be worded nicer.
Yeah. Then, if we look at another fundamental of any investment, there is no discernible timeline to cash flow positivity or profit. That's because there is no legal trade. There is no accurately defined market. There is no accurately structured and defined and regulated trade protocol. So your investment is going into a business that's output, that's product, and its claim to potential profitability is on an illegal trade. And the trade dynamics, if we just take trade dynamics and replace it with market dynamics, there is not a definitive view. And I know this is going to get people's backs up, but there isn't. There is no definitive view over the size of the market, and there is no definitive view over the size of the supply. Supplies have been compromised. Supplies have been bullshitted for years. So we don't know what the supply is. And there is no metric that suggests that that supply is going to be sufficient to satiate the appetites of the East. I know of no empirical data that argues that point, that says this is the size of the market and this is the size of the supply. It is all speculated in the variance. Peter, you can back me up on this, but even from the pro traders, the speculation is something like it ranges from four thousand tons a year.
Sorry, I can't remember offhand.
But the band, the I went a bit dead on that as well.
Yeah,
but the band is incredibly broad, so there isn't definitive data. So if I was an investor, and quite tongue in cheek, I can imagine Hume going on Shark Tank And they say to him, well, what's your product? Rhino horn. Well, that's exciting. How big is the market? I don't really know. And the supply? Well, I know my supply, but I don't know the market dynamics. Oh, and, oh, sorry, guys, I forgot to tell you. Internationally banned. He wouldn't get a shark to bite on his business. The fundamentals just simply are not there. So, you know, here's the rub for me, is that what if the business model was altered to be a genuine bastion of conservation and a crossover model of philanthropy and impact investment was explored and considered? Because that's essentially what's being put forward now. And this is where I get excited, because now I go, okay, now all of a sudden we're talking about an opportunity that where we could potentially align. And yet I don't think that there is much to be excited about in that side, because if we look at that opportunity, so somebody buys it, doesn't want to trade through Platinum Rhino, doesn't want to trade Rhino Horn, isn't about that, is a complete devout purist and says, we're just going to use these rhinos to sell and to repopulate areas that have been decimated by poaching. On paper, it sounds fantastic, but what would the barriers be for that investor? And if we look at it, we look at the rhino market again. So who is going to buy the rhino? And in my opinion, unless there was a coordinated effort by the biggest names in the game, and we're talking African Parks, Peace Parks, KWS, Sand Parks, multiple government authorities, WWF, and that level of operation, unless they were committing to a certain level of offtake, I'm not sure there is a market. Because very simply, it is the liability of owning a rhino has not been mitigated. The poaching crisis continues. Regrettably, this auction does not coincide with peace. And as a result, who is going to buy the rhino? Because now I'm going to have an additional cost of security. I'm going to have additional liabilities and risks to my staff, my guests, or whatever it might be. So when you've got that number of rhino, who is the market going to be? And as far as I know, none of those big name authorities are putting their hand up saying, we'll take 200 a year. I've got to assume
that it would have to be a conservation rhino animal lover that wants to help actually save the rhino, because that's what everyone that is working with rhino wants to do. That's what everyone's trying to do. They're just doing it on a much smaller scale.
100%. But so that would require a pure philanthropist to come in. Yeah. And they're not coming in at the purchase price. They'll go, okay, cool. I've got 10 million bucks in my hand, but I'm going to need at least double that. I'm going to need to at least double that, should I say.
So that I was going to ask, what's the right number? What's the right number for what the assets are? Like, what makes sense? If you were to say, okay, a rhino is right now going for this much money per rhino, and then look at what assets he already has in place, cameras, security, fencing, all of that. Like, what do you think the actual CapEx and OpEx, and what are the numbers there?
I'll be very, very honest, is that when we were considering the property along with others, I can't answer that. I'm bound by an NDA. But I do, what I can say is that I'm sure those numbers have changed. And any of the registered bidders have access to their full financials. So they will be making those calculations, working out is going to be the cost, the operational capital required for a thumbsuck period before we can start to, even if it is for free, distribute them. And then when we're going to distribute them, or let's just hold on to the idea of a for-profit model, which there is a conservation for-profit model in there. We look at the price. Now, the asking price has been assumed based on the number of animals, the asset register, the title deeds of the farms, the multiple farms themselves that make up Dream Ranch. They're going to look at all of those considerations. And because the market is so suppressed for rhino, we're not seeing a massive appetite to buy rhino for all of those reasons we've discussed. Mm. But because of that, that the amount that someone would pay for a rhino is in question. And I think that that's one of the outcomes of this auction. Should we, as the, you know, the plebs in the public, get eyes on the transaction fundamentals, is this could be the first real definitive view that on a mass level, where we'll see the value of a rhino. Because it's, I mean, it's, a black rhino cow, a Bicornis Michaeli cow is going to fetch R1 million. But a white rhino bull, cheapers, I mean, some of them you can't even give away. So this is, I think this is going to give us some fairly good insight into the current state of what is the value of a rhino.
Based what do you think is going to happen if nobody bids?
Look, I have a feeling that that's possible. I think then you would start to see smaller lots of rhinos being auctioned and sold, 20 at a time, 30 at a time. You'll see some of that, but I don't think that he's going to offload 2,000 rhino. Carry on, Peter.
I was just going to say one thing that would make some kind of logical sense to me was that if a body like Sandparks was to turn around, if they had the money to do it, to turn around and say, well, we've lost all these rhino, we've lost 10,000 rhinos in our parks, or whatever the figure is now. The $10 million for Hume's rhino is the cost of replenishment. And you could say, well, we're going to buy them so that we want to put them back into conservation areas, back into national parks, or maybe seed new populations in other areas that historically have been white rhino areas. But then you've got the added dynamic that until you've been able to a very large extent, not completely, but to a very large extent, solve the poaching problem, you're just putting rhinos back into a position and you're replenishing the stock for the rhino, for the poachers, syndicates.
Exactly.
So it's an absolute round and round circle that is almost impossible to get out of. Unless you were to buy, that benefactor came along and said, okay, I'm going to invest so much in Hume's rhinos. I'm also going to invest in conservation, in rhino protection generally. And then I'm going to wait it out. I'm going to look after those rhinos as a seed population to put back into conservation at a stage. But then you've got the added dynamic that for every cycle that those cows breed, you're breeding them further and further away from their natural situation. So they're becoming effectively more domesticated, more like cows.
You've hit on one of my points that I wanted to make there. And this is quite a contentious subject because there are a lot of varying opinions on this and scientists disagree on this. And if there's one thing I've learned in my digging in the last few days is that this is a subject that I really want to understand better because there's conflicting schools. You know, the one school says that after the third or the fourth generation of a captive bred rhino, they cannot be rewilded. And others say, doesn't matter, you can rewild any rhino, they're fine. So there is a standoff in that. But if we take some fairly well-publicized science that there is a third or a fourth generation lock-off over what can be rewilded from a captive bred rhino, you've got an animal welfare problem brewing because you're going to have hundreds of rhino that can't go anywhere and have got to live out their days somewhere. So you've got that cost to consider if indeed that science is accurate. The other thing is the cost of relocating 2,000 rhino.
That's massive.
If you assume that some rhino prices that I've seen recently are as low as 30,000 rand for a white rhino bull, it's going to cost more to move the animal than it was to buy him. So
if we just take $2,000?
If we just take that as consideration, whoever is buying this has got to enter into the dynamics of who is my market and how are they going to go about this? Because part of the due diligence of understanding your market is understanding your supply chain and your route to market, to use crass terminology. So your route to market is not just the physical logistics of what does it cost and what do I need to sedate rhino, load rhino, drive rhino, fly rhino, whatever it is that you need to do. But there's also the permitting. That's a huge barrier. The administrative side of what goes into getting the permits to move a rhino across a provincial border or out the front gate, across a provincial border, out of the country, that is extensive in its own right. And I would be fascinated, because to me, this would be telling to answer the question of, do we think anybody is actually going to hit the right number on this? No one is going to part with $10 million unless they've done an enormous amount of research. And I would love to be a fly on the wall in DFFE's office and Northern Cape Parks Board, Eastern Cape Parks Board, Cape Nature, everywhere, and just ask them, how many inquiries have you had as to the permitting process to move rhinos? Is this a number that people can understand without engaging with the authorities to do their due diligence? I'd be fascinated to know, because relocation and the legalities and the regulations around relocation are extraordinary. And I would love to know. Somebody's got to know. Somebody's got to know. And okay, I mean, this is where I'm going I'm going into like sleuth mode, because I'm so desperate to know who is inside that bidding group. but that would be a critical telltale. Who's done the homework to understand transport, logistics, regulations in those rhinos? Or have we just miraculously got a bunch of bidders who want to buy them and not move them? Have they gone through this process and gone through, you know, a deeper version of our discussion now and gone, it's not safe to move them now, so it's actually a relevant point of due diligence to assess a cost that is not pertinent to the current business case? Don't know. It's an interesting one.
I don't think that John has done himself any favors over the last number of years, because all I remember hearing is how much money it's costing him and how hard it is and how he needs somebody to come in and help him. So he's kind of put it out there that this is a huge liability, and it seems like Business Rescue needs to come in and help him at this point. It's like nobody wants to take on a big liability like that. I think everybody's scared of that. Like, why should I take on your problem now?
Well, Shanna, thank you. This is a subjective point of view, but what gets to me about 10 plus years of this narrative is that we want to privatize the profit and we want to democratize the cost. Bleeding hearts, help me save rhino. Okay. Yeah. The other thing I would love to know is the horn stockpile part of the sale? Is that in the auction? That's an asset of the farm, isn't it?
Well, that would have to be listed in all of the assets, and that would definitely have to be advertised that it's part of it. But I mean, is he even allowed to do that? Would he be allowed to transfer ownership of all of those?
To another South African, he would be able to. He couldn't trade it overseas, no.
Domestic trade in rhino horn is legal.
Oh, right.
So then you would need you'd need lots of people like Hume to say, well, I'll invest in part of that, because I envisage that there will be a legal market quite soon, which is, as we know, extremely unlikely. The world doesn't really have an appetite for that.
So then we know that just storing the horn year after year after year, it costs a lot of money. And I'm assuming you have to renew permits on that as well, to some degree, some of the permits to have it. So just having that is such a liability. And it's a danger.
So Hume's horn stockpile must be fairly extensive. If you've got 2,000 rhino, you've got a lot of mortalities as much as you have wonderful births. So, he's sitting on rhino horn. And that hasn't, I haven't seen any documentation that says it's in or it's out. It's just an unstated thing. Game goes to intention, doesn't it? Yeah, that absolutely talks to intention.
Well, all these points will be opened out, won't they, in the course of the next while the auction's open? Because people will be asking those questions.
I think they'll be asking them. Whether we get answers on them, I don't know. Mm. My sense is not. I think we're going to witness again this very aggressive sort of bullying and intimidation from pro-use that typifies any question that makes them uncomfortable. The response is typically aggressive.
Yeah. All I'm saying is that there's an auction going on, and say I was interested in buying it. One of my first questions would be, John, does that include the stockpile?
Right.
And to which he would give an answer, and that question would be resolved.
Right. So there's somebody out there knows the answer to the question.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if it was included. I think that's...
Yeah, me too.
Not that you need much more than 10 million for a retirement policy, but I would think he's holding on to it in the hopes that while he's still alive, he sees the trade open up and he's able to do something.
I mean, look, you're also assuming he still has any of it, because he could, like you said, domestically you can sell it. Maybe he's sold it all already.
That is probable, but given the failure in his very public attempts to auction Rhino Horn, I doubt it. I doubt it. But I mean, if we just go back to sort of that information, you know, what we were talking about earlier. So when you consider Platinum Rhino as an investable for trade entity, the fundamentals of an investment are not there. And to me, that answers why Hume has never seen an investor of any magnitude, or certainly publicly stated, get involved in the project, is because it's a shit investment.
It has no tourism value. I mean, who's going to come along to see 2,000 rhinos on a farm, you know?
No.
You're like coming to see my cows, you know?
That's it. He's got two SKUs, a living rhino, or a rhino horn. That's it.
Mm.
Let me ask you something, though. Can I put this out there? Like, you say, who's going to come see that? But I was in Kenya at a place called Solio, and they have quite a big array of rhino there. And I thought it was amazing to see all those rhino. So, I mean, for people that are tourists that want to just come see rhino, I mean, it was a beautiful place with beautiful scenery. So the pictures were stunning. Do you not think people might want to do that here?
I think that there is a potential of that. And that was actually one of the points I wanted to get to, is that for anybody to purchase it, it's not just rewilding the rhino. There's the potential of rewilding the farms, because obviously the carrying capacity of 8,500 hectares, that's the combined acreage of Dream Ranch, of Platinum Rhino. And not all of that is being utilized by rhino. I don't know what the percentage is. I've got no way of understanding that. But to have 2,000 rhino on that amount of land is a pretty high concentration. So there is an opportunity to say, if you've got less pressure on that land, could you rehabilitate and rewild the farms themselves to turn it into a tourism product? The short answer is yes, absolutely. There are a host of incredible entrepreneurs around the country and around the continent that have gone into far more desolate areas. You know, I mean, there are externalities in the challenges to that. The Northern Cape is not really considered a tourist destination. So it would be a real destination visit in every sense of the term. Is there a market for someone that just wants to come out and see rhino, buffalo, some plains game? Don't know. I'm not a tourism economist. I don't know, but I would argue that yes, there is potential of rewilding the farms themselves into a tourism product. The viability of that in a truly commercial sense, again, in the currency of dollar and the currency of time, remains to be seen. I think that that would be part of the due diligence of someone considering that land. And they would probably phone a host of our friends going, hey, what is the potential of this? And how would I evaluate rewilding 8,500 hectares?
But even that would require very, very deep pockets.
And a hell of a lot of time.
Yeah, I mean, if you take a property like Shamwari that has been reclaimed, and how long that has taken to develop that, you look at the Oppenheimer's property at Swalu, the amount of investment that has to go into that before you can start deriving income from tourism is huge.
Yeah.
100%. So I think buying the farms is just the beginning of the exercise.
Yeah. And it's an expensive capital outlay. If we go back to Shamwari and what Adrian Gardner did there was remarkable, because he was working with agricultural land that was being repurposed, whose value wasn't nearly what it is now. If you had to subdivide those farms that make up Shamwari again and put a price tag to all of them, you're going to get a hell of a return. $10 million. $10 million, R180 million for 8,500 hectares. Take the rhinos out of it completely. That's an expensive piece of land to get a return. No matter how you slice up that investment.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Because at the moment, the only tradable asset, sorry, I had made a mistake earlier. I said the only two things he can trade, is his SKUs or rhino horn and rhinos, is that he can trade the land, obviously. And that's obviously part of the deal. And that's the only one that you can do a definitive analysis over what your potential return is and over what period. So in that sense, it could be argued that you're paying $10 million for 8,500 hectares of land in the Northern Cape. Because that's the only thing that has an absolute that you could understand through property market dynamics. But anyway, there's still a part of me that, and anybody that's lost a business knows that it hurts and it sucks on a very, very deep personal level. And on that measure, Hume has my sympathies. For whatever his motivation is, he didn't go into it to fail. And to laud the failure as a victory for someone else, I think is
it's just
cruel. And
I mean, he may not feel like it's a failure, though. I think he's just at this point that he wants to retire.
I hope he doesn't see it as a failure, because there's 2,000 rhino that have the potential for bolstering conservation efforts now.
Yeah.
2 years ago, those 2,000 rhino were not possible for conservation value. Now they are.
Yeah.
So yeah. The game has changed. The discussion has changed. And that's what the one thing, and I'll say this outright, this is Simon talking now, no longer pragmatic, but I abhor this bullshit grandstanding. And I want to go back to it, because there have been people that have just jumped up and down on this thing of going, conservation hero, look at this. This is a failure. We're going to lose rhino. If this doesn't find a solution, rhinos are going to go extinct, blah, 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 blah. I think it is highly, highly manipulative. And I think it's appalling grandstanding, because the issues are so much more sensitive than simply saying this is a travesty and this is a slight on conservation heroes like Hume. It's not. Hume is a bloody good businessman. He knows that he speculated. He knows that he went after a trade in the hope that it would open up and he would be the guy in front. And it didn't work out. He speculated and he failed. In pure business senses, that's what happened. And this idea that certain people are now taking this conveniently emotional collateral damage of these destitute rhinos to further an argument that they had 6 months ago when they were dead quiet when Hume was asking for money and they didn't take their checkbooks out, pisses me off. I think that's poor form. I really do. But, you know, I also think that a lot of people will start to ask, well, you know, this is going to bring the trade discussion back to the fore. And, you know, I don't know if you guys saw in the news over the last few days, there was this weird standoff where Cyril Ramaphosa, South Africa's president, made the statement that South Africa wanted to leave the ICC, the International Criminal Court, after Vladimir Putin was issued a warrant of arrest. And then they backtracked. And it was like, no, it was confusion, it was miscommunication, blah, blah, blah. But just consider that for a second. Consider the fact that South Africa's biggest bedfellows are China and Russia. We're part of BRICS.
Yeah.
I am petrified of what happens on a global geopolitical landscape that seems increasingly to ask people to choose sides. And when we choose sides with China and we turn around and we say, okay, China, we're open for business. Screw the ICC. We'll withdraw from CITES. We don't care. Do you think that this potential trade in wildlife products out of Africa is not going to get worse before it gets better? I think you're naive. I think we haven't even scratched the tip of the iceberg, because there are things happening around the world that if that had to mushroom and if that had to kick off, I don't see anything in the South African government that says we are trying to work with foreign entities to stop the illegal wildlife trade. There's very little. You see smatterings of it. But in 15 years, I don't know of a consolidated, structured entity that is a bilateral task force that's dealing with the illegal wildlife trade between the South African government, Vietnamese, Chinese government, or whatever. Maybe it exists and it's just above my pay grade. I don't know. But I've never seen it and I've never heard of it. So we've got an appetite that just says trade with everyone. And we know that the South African Department of Environmental Affairs, now DFFE, has been captured by the pro-traders and the pro-hunters for decades. We haven't had one new piece of environmental legislation since 1994 until now, with the white paper and the policy document that's going through Parliament as we speak. And we wonder why everybody is up in arms and trying to sue the government and retractions on this. And they're losing their mind because for once, we've had a minister that has gone to bat, that didn't accept the status quo from Edna Molewa. And look at the crap that she's had to deal with. You know, and so when I look at that, when I look at the domestic pressure on the infrastructure that is there to govern our environmental affairs, DFFE or whatever you want to call it, and then I look at China's increased middle finger to the West. And remember that China only signed onto CITES as part of the Lacey Agreement when they opened up trade with the US. That was all bundled together in the early 70s. If they get shut down from trading in the West, why do they care? Now, China has very robust environmental reforms, and they've actually done some pretty good work, as I'm learning, and as I'm quite shocked to say, and I want to go into that in another episode. But it's very difficult to believe through anything but naive hope that the global geopolitical landscape is not going to negatively affect the positions that Southern Africa holds on trade when it comes to illegal wildlife, or what do we call it, regulated wildlife. How's that?
Is for there any
makes Hume look, makes Hume look like a like an entree? An hors d'oeuvre, sorry, you know, where the entree is yet to come. It's scary stuff, guys. I think there's landmark stuff down the line. Sorry, Shan, I interrupted you.
Is there any fear of the land, the rhinos, being bought by a pro-hunting group and them being hunted?
I would say it's a fairly realistic assumption to consider that a number of those rhinos on Hume's farm are likely to end up in the crosshairs of a hunter's rifle. That said, a lot of political posturing recently, with the Wildlife Ranchers Association and the Professional Hunting Association of South Africa suing the minister, and overturning, getting an injunction in the last little while that holds on to an element of use, of unregulated or underregulated utilization. It's a very simplistic view of what's going on. But although, number one, that doesn't affect the white paper or the policy paper, it's a separate issue. It does suggest that pro-utilization are taking their guns out, no pun intended, and they are gunning to open up regulation so that they can hunt more. We know that the quotas for rhino trophy hunting were halted pending further investigation. I don't know what the status is on that, but it's a deep consideration, and I have no doubt that there will be hunting outfitters that would be very interested in acquiring some of those rhinos, especially if they're going for 30,000 rand or 50,000 rand a pop.
Yeah, but I mean, 2,000 rhinos into the hunting market is illogical as well. It would have to require CITES to say yes, we're quite happy for a for a world population of how many rhinos, 15,000 white rhinos, we're happy to hunt 2,000 of them. That wouldn't make sense from a CITES point of view either.
No, and the quotas wouldn't stack up. The quotas are corrected, but the quota that was shut down, that the court interdict got the injunction to have those quotas reconsidered. And if memory serves, there was only 10 or 20 rhino annual hunting licenses awarded within that. So, Hume's breeding more than they're shooting. I don't think it's a viable single output for those rhino.
Not
really realistic. I don't think that they'll happen. But let's be honest, whether they're going to die at the hand of a hunter or you are going to have some attrition in moving 2,000 rhino, it would be a miracle to move 2,000 rhino without injury or death to a very small percentage of those rhinos, just because stuff like that happens when you move big, heavy, wild animals.
I mean, the few rhinos that have been translocated around the place, you're virtually looking at a container-sized confinement per rhino to move them. You've got 2,000. It's enormous, absolutely enormous.
So I think, guys, I mean, in summary, I think that what we've got is a deeply challenging proposition, whether you are looking at it as a trader or as a non-trader. There are some very, very deep and difficult questions to get our heads around, so that operation, whatever it turns out to be, philanthropic or commercial, has a successful outcome. And I just going back to what I said at the top of the discussion is that I hope, and I know I'm naive and I know I'm utopian, but I hope beyond hope that this event is the catalyst for us to put our crap aside and to say, guys, between all of these factions, if we are driven by conservation, as is the current and shared statement by Hume and all of us in the no trade space, for the first time, we're using the same language. Maybe it's a sales pitch. I don't know, but I'm going to go on what you said. We've put it on the table. We're driven by a shared agenda. What are we going to do with it?
The big collective question to answer.
You said there's a link. Can you see anything happening on that link right now? Because I haven't seen it yet.
No, it's we're not registered, but it's a blind auction. So as I understand it, even those who have registered, I don't think that they can see anybody else bidding. I think what's going to happen is it's going to be radio silence, and then sometime in the second week, there'll be an announcement of some sort. Right. But I also, okay. if I put myself in a position, I don't want to be the first mover at an auction.
No, never. But if it's blind, how do you know?
What's that?
But if it's blind, then what does that make a difference? You don't know.
Don't know.
You get one bid, right? Blind, one bid, highest bid wins.
That's how I'm reading it. And again, it's impossible to know more without registering. And even if I did register, I'd be under an NDA as thick as, you know, War and Peace. And
yeah.
I probably wouldn't want to speculate on this forum.
Well, they have to start bidding at 10 million, don't they? I mean, that's the reserve he's put on it.
Yeah. Mm. My gut punch on this is that no one is going to part with 10 million.
Mm.
And they're going to wait for a statement when they can start buying assets and they can start buying rhinos.
Mm.
Because then the price is...
They could come out and say that someone bought it. They want to remain anonymous, and they could posture that something happened when they didn't. We don't know.
My very rudimentary understanding of things like that is that is illegal. You can't misrepresent an auction.
Okay. Hmm.
So I doubt.
There's got to be a reason that it's blind, though. Like why?
Well,
you know, like,
it.
Why not let the auction, like, let people actually bid it out?
If you were very confident that you were going to get your minimum, then you would.
Well, you have to get your minimum, or there's no, you just put the reserve on. You still have a reserve.
But if you get to a point where it's a blind auction and someone could put down and say, here's my offer for X and Y, but I don't want Z. You have the ability to go back and say, okay, second lot, here's Z. Do you guys
right, know this? Right.
If you've got an open bid, it's kind of like an all or nothing. And the strategies won't play out. So I think it's quite clever of Platinum Rhino to do a blind auction, if it is indeed a fully blind auction, because you're giving yourself options and you're not revealing your value or lack of value as the auction progresses. I think the next few days are going to be really interesting. I have no doubt that someone is going to be incapable of keeping their mouth shut, and something will be leaked. Something will happen. as always tends to happen with these things. And I've got my ear to the ground, but obviously, you know, respecting everybody involved in that process, and hopefully it can go off legitimately and without concern. And there's a fair and good result at the end of it that doesn't see those rhinos in a welfare predicament. Because that's my worst case scenario. Very easy to say that when I don't have $10 million in a checkbook that I'm willing to take out. But I think from the spectator's view, destitute or rhinos at risk as a result of this failure of an auction, or a potential failure of an auction, would be the worst case scenario. And there could be those deliberately waiting for that to happen, because then you're going to get it at $5 million. Because all bets are off now.
Yeah.
This is business. This is business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the bleeding heart stuff is over. You know, people are going to go, I want maximum value for minimum input. That's what an auction is. You know, the guy that's bidding wants to put the least in, and the guy that is putting up the bid wants the most. It's a classic capitalist standoff. So who knows? Who knows? I very much doubt if anybody does take out their checkbook that it'll go above 10 million. I'll be very, very, very surprised if it does. Even if it hits a minimum, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, $10 million and $1.
$10 million and $1, yeah. I'll be, yeah. Technically,
10 million rand.
Jeez, but anyway, I mean, I think that's literally all I have it on it at the moment. I'm sure we'll get some
insights.
That is a lot, yeah. I'm afraid this week we've listened to the first listeners of the podcast.
Yeah, we are. We got the front row seat.
Sorry, guys.
We don't even need to be here.
Well done. Yeah.
Oh God. Okay. Sorry, guys.
Not at all. Not at all.
But yeah, I think to all of our listeners, and I know this will be of interest to all of you, and keep your ear close to this. If you've got any questions about the auction or about Hume or about trade or anything like that, please send them through to info@artofconservation.org or hit us up on any social media platform, LinkedIn, Insta, Facebook. You can find us on all of those and share your thoughts, share your questions, your statements. And let's make this conversation broader than just the three of us. It's a deeply nuanced and complicated discussion, and one that's ripe for a very solid, very pragmatic revisit. So please stick around, follow us on all of our social media platforms, and please send us a review. It's the currency we desperately need in Podcastville. So any rating or review, we would absolutely appreciate that. Share this episode far and wide, and let's try and get this conversation. We'll see you again soon. Take care.
We must rethink our relationship with wildlife, the environment, and each other. Join us as we uncover the innovative, unifying, and urgent solutions we need to protect the planet from ourselves. This is the Art of Conservation.